Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, October 29th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Democrats have a fundraising advantage going into the final days. What will Republicans do if they take over the U.S. Senate? And two ballot measures in Minneapolis. In the final days of the campaign, Democrats have the financial advantage, Catherine Richert reports.
What matters most to candidates and parties now is not how much they've raised or spent, but how much money they have in their bank accounts. And by that measure, Governor Mark Dayton, the DFL party, and a key political group that supports him are in the lead with more than $1 million to spend in the next week. Meanwhile, Republican gubernatorial candidate Jeff Johnson and his allies have about $750,000 to spend. Democrats also have the upper hand in the hotly contested state House races with more than $1 million in cash on hand. House Republicans are sitting on about $200,000, but their efforts to win control of the House from Democrats are being bolstered by a flurry of last-minute spending by conservative political groups that aren't affiliated with specific candidates. All told, the Minnesota House races have attracted more than $6.6 million. That's a figure that's likely to go up before the election is decided. Catherine Richert, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A Minneapolis city council member is proposing that the city analyze arrest records of all police officers for patterns of racial bias. Laura Ewan reports.
Councilmember Andrew Johnson says the numbers could help explain why African Americans are several times more likely than whites to be arrested for certain minor offenses.
With that analysis, it doesn't tell the full story, but it tells part of the story, and it helps us better understand where we might want to focus and look closer at particular officers or particular citation types or behaviors to figure out how we can help eliminate these disparities.
Johnson has been working with Police Chief Janae Harto on the directive. Harto says she'd like more data to get the full picture of what's behind the disparities. A new report by the ACLU found that the Minneapolis Police Department was 11 times more likely to arrest an African American for marijuana possession than a white person. Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
With less than a week of campaigning to go, it's looking more likely that Republicans could take control of the U.S. Senate next year. What happens to legislation and lawmaking if Republicans do win and control both chambers of Congress? Brett Neely has this report.
Republican U.S. Senate candidates such as Mike McFadden in Minnesota say that victory this November would mean Republicans would tackle big issues that haven't been addressed under divided government. Here's McFadden speaking on NPR News earlier this month.
We need to dramatically simplify the tax code and make it transparent.
On the campaign trail, Republicans say deregulating energy policy, repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act, and cutting government spending are on the to-do list if they win the Senate. But Michael Tanner, a senior fellow at the Libertarian Cato Institute, says a Republican-controlled Senate actually won't do very much for the next 2 years.
You're not going to see major changes in legislation. Whether you like the Republicans or don't like the Republicans, they're not going to do all that much when they're in control of the Senate.
That's because Senate Democrats will likely hold enough seats to filibuster legislation they don't agree with, and President Obama will be able to veto anything that he disagrees with that does make it out of Congress. For the past 6 years, Democrats have controlled either all or part of Congress, and Obama has signed almost every bill that's passed. Facing a Republican-controlled Congress, Tanner says Obama will use his veto pen to defend his legacy, such as the Affordable Care Act.
No matter what the Republicans say during the campaign, the Affordable Care Act is unlikely to be repealed over the next couple of years.
Republican Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky says he plans to attach policy provisions to major spending bills to block the administration's environmental policies and push other GOP priorities. But longtime congressional scholar Norm Ornstein at the American Enterprise Institute says that approach likely won't succeed.
You can't do that in individual appropriations bills very easily because Democrats will filibuster them. But even if you pass them and they include provisions like that, Obama's going to veto. And the alternative is you shut down the government.
None of this is to say that Republican control of Congress is insignificant. Executive branch and judicial nominees will have a much harder time getting confirmed. And Republicans will have more power to initiate investigations and decide what legislation comes up for a vote. Tanner says Republicans will try to put Democrats on the defensive by holding votes to repeal the medical device tax and the mandate that employers offer insurance to their workers.
Harry Reid would not allow those things to come up for a vote. So a Republican-controlled Senate would allow those things to vote.
Aside from must-pass spending bills, one of the few potential areas of cooperation in the next 2 years will likely be on trade policy, where the president is asking Congress for more authority to negotiate a trade deal with Asia. Overall, Tanner says Republicans will probably try to play it safe for the next 2 years.
But congressional leadership isn't what really counts. It's going to be the presidential candidate in 2016, their plan, that's going to be the plan that Republicans line up behind. Nobody really wants to go on the record now not knowing what that's going to be.
Another reason Republicans may be cautious, many Senate Republicans who represent Democratic-leaning states will be on the ballot in 2016. Still, the Tea Party grassroots of the GOP may be impatient for results, says Norm Ornstein.
If you're in the majority, you're going to be pushed in directions you don't necessarily want to go.
Ornstein believes another government shutdown could be possible as grassroots party members push lawmakers to confront the administration over every possible issue. And Ornstein warns that if Obama uses his executive authority to offer some kind of residency for undocumented immigrants after the elections, those grassroots will put intense pressure on congressional Republicans.
You're going to get an explosion out there with a Republican base, and they'll be demanding impeachment hearings.
Ornstein says that at best, he expects a temporary truce between the parties over the next 2 years. And in the worst-case scenario, he expects either a shutdown or an attempt to impeach Obama. Brett Neely, Minnesota Public Radio News, Washington.
Along with the races for governor, U.S. Senate, Congress, and the State House, many Minnesota voters will be asked to decide questions on the ballot next week. Most of the local referendums deal with school funding. But in Minneapolis, voters will consider two proposed changes to the city charter. Curtis Gilbert has more.
Question number one would raise the cost of filing to run for office in Minneapolis. Its purpose is to keep candidates like Jeff Wagner off the ballot.
I will not take money from the developers. I will not take money from the political angle. I will not even go to the strip clubs anymore. Wake the f*** up!
Wagner's quixotic run for mayor last year was built around a series of web videos showing him in varying states of undress. The internet loved the videos. Blogs all over the country linked to them. But Wagner ended up with fewer than 200 votes. Charter Commission Chair Barry Clegg says most of the 35 candidates who ran for mayor last year had no chance of winning.
I won't say they were vanity candidates or bad faith candidates, because I'm sure they all believed in what they were talking about, but they were not credible.
Clegg says the lengthy ballot confused voters, and he argues most of the candidates only ran because it was so cheap. It costs just $20 to put your name on the ballot for city races. The proposed charter amendment would raise that fee to $500 for mayoral candidates. Other offices would see smaller increases. Candidates could avoid paying the fee by collecting at most 500 signatures. Most city leaders support raising the fee, but not Councilmember Blong Yang. He says the proposal is anti-democratic and doesn't address the underlying problem.
There was a circus in 2013 with the mayoral ballot, but if you look at what was to blame, I don't think you can blame filing fees. I mean, I think what you should be blaming is ranked choice voting.
The city implemented ranked choice voting in 2009. The new system eliminated the primary elections that used to winnow down voters' choices before the general election. Now all candidates appear on the general election ballot, and voters can indicate a first choice, a second choice, and a third choice. Ranked choice voting advocate Jean Massey acknowledges the long list of candidates didn't help her cause.
It, in the end, didn't create a big problem, but it created a lot of discussion it didn't need to create among the media, among voters. There were a lot of eyes rolling.
That's one reason Massey's organization, Fair Vote Minnesota, is urging Minneapolis residents to vote yes on question one and raise the filing fee. Question two is all about alcohol.
Anything to drink?
Tilia, located in the Tony Linden Hills neighborhood, is one of several dozen restaurants in Minneapolis bound by the city's 70-30 rule. They're supposed to make at least 70% of their revenue from food sales, with no more than 30% coming from beer and wine. It's designed to keep restaurants located in residential areas from disturbing their neighbors. Tilia owner Stephen Brown says with the popularity of more expensive craft beer, it's hard to meet the requirement.
If you came in and ordered a beer for $6 and a sandwich for $9 or $10,
you are immediately out of compliance in this idea of the 70-30 rule.
City staff say many businesses have run afoul of the rule, and Brown argues there's no downside to scrapping it.
I don't think anybody's going to come and open a raucous roadhouse tavern in Linden Hills next week after the election and the thing passes. It's just not going to happen that way.
City officials say new ordinances passed earlier this year will prevent the restaurants from effectively turning into bars. But Marlene Parks, who lives in the Fulton neighborhood, isn't convinced.
I'm not a teetotaler. I think if I was in my 30s, I'd probably be woo, woo, woo about all this stuff, and I'm not. These are family neighborhoods. It could change everything for them, a lot, traffic-wise, noise-wise. And I think Minneapolis is opening up a can of worms that I don't think they should be opening up.
State law sets a higher bar for charter changes like this one because it deals with alcohol. To pass, it needs a 55% majority. The filing fee amendment needs 51% support. If recent history is a guide, both will likely succeed. Minneapolis voters have rejected only one proposed charter amendment in the last 20 years. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.